Chapter 9. The immediate cause of Great Aunt Lucy's being admitted to the Nightingale ward of Isham General Hospital was a broken leg, but the real reason, she later claimed, was the quality of the lining of the curtains in her room. This did not at once emerge, as the old lady was understandably shocked and rambling after her injury, but when the true facts came to light, Mrs. Bagthorpe was quite distraught. Her deep breathing failed. She went temporarily into being a failed Stella Bright. "I should have listened," she wailed, to an audience more fascinated by her derangement than by what she was actually saying. "She knew that the rays of the moon were affecting her, and I dismissed it all as idle superstition." "It was idle superstition," her husband told her. "Pull yourself together, Laura. If the sanity of mankind hinged upon the utilization of super-quality curtain linings, the race would have become extinct at the Paleolithic era. No cave, so far as I know, made use of such a product." "They used animal hides," Rosie told him. "Animal hides are a lot thicker than any curtain, even velvet." "Be quiet," he told her, irritated by the realization that a pertinent point had been made. "Your mother is in no mood for that kind of trivial talk. Lucy had an outsized bee in her bonnet and is paying the price. We must all hope that she will emerge from the experience a little older and wiser." "Older anyway," William put in, "though she'll never admit it." The amazing thing was that Mr. Bagthorpe's hopes were eventually realized. Great Aunt Lucy did emerge, though not for 3 weeks, considerably wiser. She emerged, in fact, converted to a belief in time. What brought about this miraculous change was not breaking her leg, per se, but her stay in the hospital. The manner of her accident had indisputably been brought about by her strenuous belief in the sinister influence of the moon's rays. She had been roaming about the house at dead of night in search of kippers, in order to convince both time and the moon that it was breakfast time, when she had tripped against a sack of mushrooms and fallen. Normally, bags of mushrooms would not have been lying around on the landing, but Mr. Bagthorpe had found that a great saving could be made by raising these fungi in a large bag of suitably compounded compost, and had accordingly invested in one. The rest of the household were woken by Aunt Lucy's screams and the barking of Wang Fu. They emerged from their rooms bleary-eyed and bad-tempered to find out what was going on. When they did find out, sympathy for Aunt Lucy was scant. "Why, Lucy, in the name of all that is wonderful, did you not switch on the light?" demanded Mr. Bagthorpe. The patient was in no mood for cross-examination, though one was inevitably to take place later in the hospital, to the intense interest of the rest of the ward. It later became clear, however, that not turning on lights was part of her strategy to fool time. She maintained that if lights were turned on, then time would know it was night, and she had accordingly tried to sneak past time with a small torch. This had failed to pick out the bag of mushrooms. Great Aunt Lucy had already established a minor reputation for eccentricity by the time the Bagthorpes went to visit her the following day, though the hospital was not yet acquainted with the full range of bees in her bonnet. The head nurse had been able to make little of Aunt Lucy's description of how the accident occurred. She asked the Bagthorpes to give her the real facts. "People simply do not fall over sacks of mushrooms on landings in the middle of the night," she said. "At our place they do," Mr. Bagthorpe told her. "How long is she going to be in here?" "It is for the doctors to say, of course," replied the nurse. "But I should imagine for several weeks, especially at her age. And perhaps you could tell me, incidentally, what her age is. She doesn't appear to know, and became quite agitated when we pressed her." "She would," Mr. Bagthorpe told her. "If you've got her for a month, you'll find out how agitated she gets, all right. And for all our sakes, try to get her sorted out, will you? She's 87. "May we see her now?" inquired Mrs. Bagthorpe. "There is rather a large number of you," the nurse said dubiously. "Look," said Mr. Bagthorpe, "we do not have the time, nor can we afford the petrol, to pay daily visits here for the next few weeks. We are trying to survive. We will take our full quota of visiting time for the week now, please." With this, he marched past her, and the rest of the family trailed after him. Great Aunt Lucy was halfway down the ward, propped up on pillows, and with a hooped cage over her leg. Nobody else had visitors. It was not, in fact, visiting time, simply a time convenient to Mr. Bagthorpe. and all eyes followed the procession with interest. "It's not visiting time, is it?" asked the woman in the next bed to Lucy. "There is no such thing as time," Aunt Lucy told her coldly. "Kindly do not refer to it again in my presence. Now, there you are, Henry and Laura. Why did you put a sack of mushrooms on the landing? For I was almost certain to fall over it." "If the light had been switched on, you would have seen it," he told her. "And you should have been in bed, asleep, the same as anybody else, not roving abroad in search of kippers." "It was breakfast time," Aunt Lucy asserted obstinately. "You do not switch on lights at breakfast time." The listeners in the surrounding beds, having all observed Great Aunt Lucy's entry into the ward at 2 a.m., raised eyebrows at one another. They had also witnessed her refusal of breakfast. "I have no wish for a poached egg," she had informed a bewildered orderly. "I am not in the habit of consuming poached eggs at lunchtime. I should like a lamb chop, please, lightly grilled, and mint sauce." In the end, the orderly had fetched the head nurse, who gave it as her opinion that Aunt Lucy was still under the effect of the anesthetic. "She will be bright as rain by lunchtime," she forecast optimistically. Daisy, who had never been in a hospital, except as an outpatient, had pleaded to be brought along, too. Her reasons for this had nothing to do with a wish to comfort her great-aunt, and everything to do with her current preoccupation with mortality. "We might even see some skellingtons," she confided hopefully to Rosie, "and there'll be people all cut up." She was very interested in the ward, and trotted up and down it. The inmates, enchanted by her cherubic appearance, and unaware that Daisy was in search of a skeleton, or, failing that, a corpse, made much of her. Before long, Daisy was relaying to a fascinated audience details of life as lived by the Bagthorpes. "I've been having funerals," she told them, "every day, and I've been burying poor little dead lambs and giraffes, and I know all the proper words to say, and I say, 'Dusters to dusters, and ashes to ashes, forever and ever, amen.' And Grandma Bag helps me, but she's not here because she don't like old Auntie Lucy. She thinks she's a nasty crook." Meanwhile, at Aunt Lucy's bedside, a furor was gradually gathering momentum, and the patients were torn between listening to that and hearing more from Daisy. The nurses began to hover anxiously, wondering whether or not to put the Bagthorpes out, and if so, how on earth to set about this. Mr. Bagthorpe was beginning to shout. The subject of Wung Fu's accommodation during his owner's stay in the hospital had been broached. It was she herself who brought it up. "Where is darling Wung Fu?" she inquired. "I hope that you have remembered to bring his little bowl." "But, Lucy, dear, one cannot keep a dog in the hospital," Mrs. Bagthorpe said. "Why not?" she demanded. There seems to me to be a good number of people here who would be able to exercise him for me. The rest of the time he can stay on my bed." "We will take every care of him," Mrs. Bagthorpe promised.
"We will what?"
It was at this point that Mr. Bagthorpe began to run out of control. "We already have in the house the most numb-brained, non-productive hound that ever went on four legs, but at least it does not feed on kippers at all hours of the day and night, nor has it, to date, bit. That peak of yours bit me, Lucy, and nobody can go around expecting hands that get bitten to go around feeding the mouth that bit them." He was becoming incoherent. Also, of course, it was not his hand that had been bitten, but his shin. His wife was not herself anxious to have custody of Wung Fu for any length of time. If he bit Mrs. Fosdyke, she would leave forever. Mrs. Fosdyke was already becoming restive about the new dietary arrangements, and had made no effort to conceal her satisfaction on hearing that Great Aunt Lucy was no longer at Unicorn House. "Hospital's where she belongs, leg broke or not," she had declared. "She ain't fit to be loose. Weeks it'll be before we get that horrible smell of kippers out of the furnishings. I thought fish bones was meant to make brains, not turn 'em." She had soliloquized thus at some length, though nobody, of course, paid any attention, because they were all arguing with their mouths full, as was customary at Bagthorpe mealtimes.